सतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ शांति शांति शांति
ॐ लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल लीड अस फ्रॉम डार्कनेस अनटू लाइट Lead us from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace. All right, we'll go straight into the text. Verse number 17. The path of knowledge, Jnana Yoga.
मानसं तु किं मार्गणे कृते मानसं तु किं मार्गणे कृते नैव मानसं मार्गे आर्जवात् नैव मानसं मार्गे आर्जवात्
इन्क्वायरिंग Margani. Margani means to inquire. Margani kritya, inquiry being done. What sort of inquiry? Manasam tukim. What is the mind? We discover, to our surprise, naiva manasam. There is nothing, there is no such thing as the mind. Or the mind falls apart under inquiry. And this is the direct path. In this direct path, margi arjavat, in this direct path. So the first thing is this direct path. Here, Ramana Maharshi is saying that the yoga we are taking now, the Jnana Yoga, this is the direct path. How is it the direct path? And what does it mean, the direct path? What are the advantages? In the path of bhakti, what is done is, an object is given to the mind, God, Ishvara. Hold on to Ishvara. You are holding on to the world. You withdraw from the world and hold on to Ishvara. My Rama, my Krishna, my Kali, Shiva, in whichever form. God, the God of this universe. And then what will happen? When you are entirely settled on God, the grace comes from that side and God will take care of you. So God is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. And this God will take care of you and deliver you beyond sorrow. So that's the path, that's the procedure in the bhakti path. In the path of yoga, meditation, instead of thinking about a God who is separate from you, what is done is, you stop the activity of the mind itself. You still the activity of the mind. This continuous breaking out into waves, chitta vritti. Chitta vritti nirodha. And you settle the activities, still the activities of the mind, then you, the pure consciousness, you will reveal yourself. It will be revealed by itself. You will realize that you are pure consciousness. Now, here, Ramana Maharshi says that another path is, instead of stilling the activity of the mind, or carrying on with the activity of the mind, instead of focusing on the world, focusing on God, that is bhakti. The natural activity of the mind is to focus on the world, think about things, the world. Replace it with God, that is bhakti. Stop that activity, that is yoga. What Ramana Maharshi says is, the path of jnana is to inquire into what the mind is. And that inquiry into what is the mind will translate into inquiry of who am I. We'll see how. When we inquire into it, then we will realize that you are Brahman. That you are Satchidananda, your pure consciousness. Or in Ramana Maharshi's language, you are the heart. That will be obvious. Why? Because the problem here is one of ignorance. And ignorance is revealed by knowledge. And knowledge is generated by inquiry. Look at the equation. You are Brahman. Our immediate reaction is, I don't know it, I don't feel it, I don't get it. This, I don't know it, I don't feel it, I don't get it. This complaint is called ignorance. Ignorance of what? Self-ignorance. I am Brahman, I don't know about this about myself. If there is ignorance, the direct remedy is knowledge. If not knowing is the problem, then knowing is the solution. And knowledge will come from where? Where does knowledge usually come from? Inquiry, questioning. any knowledge, it comes from inquiry. So we'll inquire into the nature of the mind, which will, you'll see, it will translate into equivalent to inquire into nature of I, who am I? And they will see that I am Brahman. But there will be a process where the so-called I will actually fall apart under inquiry and the true I will reveal itself. That will happen. So that's the procedure. Why is it called direct path? Because first of all, it is, you know, it does not take the help of, say, a secondary entity like some object called God to hold on to that. And nor does it seek to stop the mind in the hope that you will realize who you are. It goes directly to your real nature and reveals it. If the problem is caused by ignorance, the problem will be solved only by knowledge. And knowledge is produced by this inquiry. The advantages are the direct. Why is it called direct? Because it is instantaneous and effortless. That sounds nice. Many people will start smiling. Oh, good. At last, a path which is instantaneous and effortless. Instantaneous and effortless. But like the man who realized, I am the tenth man. The story yesterday which we had, when the passerby pointed out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you are the tenth. When he realized that I am the tenth, oh, I am the tenth, 9, and then 10, I am the tenth. That realization was instantaneous at the moment of its realization. And it was effortless. What practices did he have to do? Nothing except knowledge. Nothing except knowing that I am the tenth. That's all. It did not involve any other asanas, pranayama. It did not involve certain meditative practices. No, just realizing that I am that. So in that sense, effortless and instantaneous. However, doesn't mean that there is no effort. It could be preceded by years and years of effort. Mm-hmm. That's what Ramana Maharshi says here. The first 14, 15 verses, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raj Yoga, those are all paths of doing something. That has preceded it. Marga Arjava, this is the direct path. That's why nowadays this is a well-known term used often by Neo-Vedantins, especially here in the United States, there are many teachers who call it the direct path. And what they are teaching is Advaita Vedanta, especially the way Ramana Maharshi taught it in this direct inquiry into who am I. That's why it's called. Arjava comes from Riju. Riju means direct. I'm reminded of this story I read recently. Devotee came to Ramana Maharshi, a simple man, who came to Ramana Maharshi, and he was honest and he confessed that, I really don't understand or appreciate your who am I, this, I don't understand what you're trying to do. I love my Lord, my Narayana. Is it all right? And he said, yes, it is all right. But tell me what is the truth. Tell me what is the truth. Then Ramana Maharshi said, the truth is you have to find out who am I. So the man went away. Then somebody asked Ramana Maharshi, why did you do that? Don't you think that man would have benefited if you had given him a mantra of Narayana to repeat, a devotional practice? Ramana Maharshi's answer is very instructive. It shows us his thinking, his philosophy. He said, you are right. He agreed. However, what can I do? He asked me what is the truth. I have to tell him the truth. If you had asked what should I do, what practices I do, I can give you a set of practices to do which will lead you step by step to the truth. But however, if you are asking me directly what is the truth, then I have to tell you the truth. The truth is, you practice who am I, you inquire who am I, the truth will be revealed to you. That's the direct path. Why inquire into the mind? Because we are told that I am Brahman, I don't understand this. And the world, which is also Brahman by the way. Ultimately nothing other than Brahman. But there is no way of inquiring into the world because the world just entangles us in itself. That's why he said drishya varitam, turning away from the drishya. We are continuously engaged in the objects, the nature of the subject will remain occluded, hidden. So we must turn away from the drishya, from the world. When we turn away from the world, what we next encounter, even the body, that also is not difficult to dismiss from. that it, I am not the body. But what we inquire next is in my inquiry, who am I? I encounter the mind. So that's where the real subtle inquiry starts. That's why it says, manasam tu kim, what is this mind? World I've turned away from. Body is also drishya. I've turned away from, inwards into it. But what is this mind? Most of us, almost all of us, very few of us think I'm a bundle of flesh and blood. I'm a bag of flesh and blood, very few. I'm somehow intimately connected with this body. That is all right. But I am not literally this body. Most of us, we don't say that. Any educated, grown-up, sensitive person, we will say we are the mind. We are very closely connected with the mind. I am this person. When I say I am this person, basically it means the mind. So, what is this mind? Inquiry starts. Then he says the result will be, when you do this inquiry, the result will be naiva manasam. Notice the difference in the paths. Bhakti path, use the mind. You're not inquiring into what is the mind. Use the mind, think about God instead of thinking about the world. Bhakti path. Yogic path, stop using the mind. Don't inquire. Inquiry also is using the mind. Stop using the mind. Stop the mind itself. Yogic path. That's why the yogi I met in Himalayas, he said, what about the Vedantins? Both baat karte hain, they talk a lot. The Vedantin will criticize the yogi. He's sitting quietly. What's the point of it? And the yogi will criticize the Vedantin. He's talking a lot. Books and papers and seminars and discussions and arguments. How will you become enlightened that way? The yogi thinks you have to at one point stop talking, stop reading and sit down quietly and meditate. Then you will become enlightened. The Vedantin thinks that you have to inquire. There is some confusion, some ignorance. Inquire into it until light comes. That is enlightenment, literally enlightenment. So margane krite, upon inquiry. Let us move on. So now we are inquiring into the mind. Eighteenth verse.
Vrittayastvaham vrittim ashrita. Vrittayastvaham vrittim ashrita. Vrittayo mano vidyaham manah. Vrittayo mano vidyaham manah.
What is the mind? We inquire. We find mind is vritti. The mind is nothing other than the activity of the mind. The thoughts. Thoughts, memories, ideas, emotions. Just the activity, continuous activity of the mind. That is the mind. Vritti. A series of movement of the mind. So, what becomes obvious when we inquire into the mind, when we introspect. Let's take a look at this. We are going to study the mind. Look at it. What do we see? Thoughts. Vritti. Chitta vritti. And all of these vrittis can be classified into two. They are not all the same. They all can be classified into two groups. One group is what is called idam vritti. It's about something. It's about the world. That means, Swami, I don't think about the world. I don't mean it in a global sense. I mean, you're thinking about, is the garage door locked? When is the next insurance payment due? What is the air quality, and then, when are the relatives or guests are coming. All of these things about people, animals, environment, office, business, community, job, my own health, all of these, idam vritti, this, I'm thinking about many things. And I'm thinking about my own thoughts also, my feelings, my emotions, all of this thought. This feeling, this emotion, this idea, this memory. All of this is idam vritti. Idam means this. Movement of the mind, thought of the mind about this. Then there is another category which is distinct from all of this. There's one kind of vritti which is aham vritti. I. Why did you distinguish the I from the this? Because the I is never regarded as this. It's I, and to me all everything else is this. I, to me, I am the subject, everything else to me is an object. So these are the two categories. And then Ramana Maharshi points out something. Aham vritti ashrita vrittaya to aham vrittim ashrita. Notice all the this, all the other thoughts are associated with the I. It is to I that these thoughts are appearing. It is to the I that all these thoughts are related. I am the one who's thinking about the air quality. It's not just a thought about air quality. I am there. I am thinking about the air quality. I am the one who's feeling anxious. I am the one who's feeling happy. I am the one who has got spiritual, philosophical questions. I. It's not that there is a spiritual Vedantic question floating in the air. No. I am thinking that. Aham vritti ashrita. All are associated, somehow tied to this I vritti. This I vritti. And notice, also, when the I vritti goes away, all the other vrittis also go away. Deep sleep. Then there's no thought of I. But there's no other thought also. You might see the opposite is also true. So when all the other thoughts go away, I's thought also goes away. No. Sometimes I think, what are you thinking? Nothing. I am thinking nothing. But we never say, lot of thoughts are going on, but I am not there. We never say that. So I am there and following my own existence is I thought. All other thoughts come. Sometimes all of the thoughts disappear, but I remains. When the I thought disappears, nothing else remains. In deep sleep, for example, all vrittis are silenced. In samadhi, I thought disappears, all other thoughts also disappear. So, aham vritti ashrita. The mind is vrittayo manaha. What is the mind? These vrittis, these movements of the thought, of thought movements. And what are these thought movements? The I movement. The I thought. But they are all associated with the I thought. They come and go with the I thought. Then therefore, what is the mind? The I thought. What is the mind? It is the I thought. He is reducing it to the I thought. Mind is vritti, vritti is the I vritti, therefore mind is I vritti. A is equal to B, B is equal to C, so A is equal to C. What is going on? Ramana Maharshi promised inquiry into the mind. Manasam tu kim. What is this mind? What did he find? In the mind there are two kinds of... In the mind there are thoughts. Thoughts is a general word. The Sanskrit word vritti is more comprehensive. It includes thoughts, memories, perceptions, emotions, all of it together. Right? So, and all these thoughts he divides into two. I thought and other, this thought. And all of these idam vrittis, these thoughts, are associated with the I thought. They take shelter in the I thought. Therefore, he says, essentially the mind is the I thought. Essentially. He is not saying that the other thoughts are not there. They're all there. But the I thought, the ego, the I vritti is the essential thing. So now we have proceeded so far. Let's see where he goes with this. 19th verse.
Ahamayam kuto bhavati chinvata.
Ahamayam kuto bhavati chinvata.
Aipatatyaham nijavicharanam.
Aipatatyaham nijavicharanam.
Now, chinvata, upon being inquired upon, when you inquire into it, chinoti is actually to separate. You inquire deeply into, separate into its natural category, something you separate, like sand and sugar you separate. So when you inquire, you want to analyze. What are you analyzing? Aham ayam kuto bhavati. From where does this I thought come? What is this I thought? Why are we thinking this? Because this I thought is basically central to all the thoughts. And the mind is nothing but the thoughts. And we are inquiring into the nature of the mind. Why are we inquiring into the nature of the mind? Because our original inquiry is to who am I? Why are we inquiring into who am I? Because we are promised I am Brahman. And I don't realize that. So I am trying to realize that by inquiring. I inquire into who am I, find world is not helpful, turn away from the world, turn away from the body, turn to the mind. What is the mind? I thought and other thoughts. And the other thoughts are all sheltering in, associated with the I thought. When I inquire into the I thought, where is it coming from? What is it, this I thought? I patatyaham nija vicharanam. This is a statement of surprise. Lo, amazing. The I thought falls apart upon being analyzed. When you analyze it, nija vicharanam, when you analyze yourself, when you analyze this I feeling right now, it falls apart. Our question will be, yes, but how to analyze? What's the method? We will see that. Before we go into it, 20th verse is very important. Here we see the analysis of the I and then what happens or what we should expect. 20 and 21, very important. And the actual procedure we will see in 22. So first, before I go into the 20th verse, let me give you a little basic idea of what's going to happen, what's there. The whole concept in Vedanta is your pure consciousness. And in you, the pure consciousness, which is called Atman, Brahman, in you, the mind appears, the body and the senses appear, the whole world, all appears in you. It's not that they are two separate things. There is the Atman, Brahman or consciousness and there is the world outside. We seem to think that. There is no margin dividing the two. There is no boundary dividing the two. It's appearing in you. Just like in a dream. In a dream, we see a world. Places, people, things. Is the air conditioning on? Is it a little hot here? No. You feel okay?
It's all right. Everybody's okay?
Everybody's okay. Yeah. So, the danger of being a little warm and comfortable is you fall asleep. The I thought will disappear. No, it's okay. I'm fine. As long as everybody is awake. No, AC is on. Don't open it. Now, so you are pure consciousness. In you, this world is appearing, body, mind, and this entire world. Now something interesting happens. Among the things which appear, there is a certain kind of thing called the mind. And the mind has a unique characteristic among all objects which appear. Mind is also an object. The unique characteristic of the mind. It can capture or it can reflect you, the pure consciousness. It can reflect you. So a reflection of pure consciousness develops in the mind. You, the Sakshi, witness consciousness, your reflection develops in the mind. That reflected consciousness, it's called Chidabhasa. Chidabhasa. And in the mind, there are many thoughts, including the I thought. In the I thought also, that consciousness is reflected. So it's not only an I thought, it's a conscious I thought. And that's exactly what we are all feeling right now. When you say I, it's a thought and it's aware. That's the channel through which awareness comes into the mind. And through the mind, it is channeled into senses. Our senses feel aware. See, hear, smell, taste, touch. Even then through to the body, as long as the nervous system is functioning well, the whole body, up to the tip of your fingers, you feel aware, but not beyond. You feel aware in this body. And you feel aware in the senses. And more deeply you feel aware in the mind. And more deeply you feel aware in the I sense. The I sense is the source of this awareness. But this I sense which we have got, the ego, this is aware. But this awareness is a borrowed awareness. It is called Chidabhasa. Abhasa, shadow, reflection. Chit, consciousness. The shadow or reflection of consciousness in the I sense. And what is the consciousness? Pure consciousness is by itself limitless awareness existence. Satchidananda, it's there. You are there. That's you, the real you. You know what it is like? When you bring a mirror in front of you. The moment you bring a mirror in front of you, what will happen? Your face will be reflected there. Everything will be reflected there. Especially your face. Everything reflected there, imagine the mirror is the mind. Everything reflected there, the wall, pillars and all of this, is like this thought, this thought, this thought. But your face reflected in the mirror is like I thought. And there are two things there in the face reflected in the mirror. It's a reflection. And it's also very much like your own real face. It's very much like a real face. Similarly, the I thought is also very much like you, the pure consciousness, because it borrows consciousness from you. That's the unique thing about the mind. All other things appear in consciousness. They don't reflect consciousness. They just appear in consciousness. But the mind reflects consciousness. How peculiar? Why should it be like that? Well, we have such examples. It's not difficult to understand. There might be a peculiar property of some object, like a mirror. So, if you look, if you're looking here, nowhere your face is reflected. But if I put a piece of glass, a mirror here, your face will be reflected there. Can you lend me a mobile, somebody? And turn on the camera. Turn on the camera. Turn on the camera. Yeah. So, wait. Where is the camera pointing?
There. Yeah.
Look, you're seeing all these objects, but now what happens when you look at this one more object? What happens suddenly? You're seeing yourself, right?
Yes.
You're seeing yourself. Yeah. You can see your own face there. It's also an object. This is an object, this is an object, this is an object, but you're not seeing yourself. You're seeing your own face here in the camera. Now, notice you are reflected in the camera. Everything is captured by the camera, in the screen. You can see everything here, but you can see your own face also. Among all those things, one of the things which is seen is very much similar to you, your real face. That's the reflected face. Similarly, in the mirror of the mind, in the camera, the screen of the mind, all sorts of thoughts are there. There's one particular thought, which is the I thought, which captures you. You means you, consciousness. It shines with your light. And it can behave like a conscious entity. It illumines other things also. It illumines itself first, and it feels I. Then it illumines other thoughts. I am thinking. And through the senses, it illumines the senses. I have the experience of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. Keno Upanishad puts it in such glorious language. That's how it starts. Starts, you know, Keno Upanishad. Keneshitam patati preshitam mana. Kena prana prathama preti yuktaha. Keneshitam vacham imam vadanti. Chakshushrotram kaudeva yunakti. What brightness, Deva. What light. Illumined by what light do you have the experience of thinking, seeing, hearing, speaking? So, by what light? What is that light? You, the pure consciousness, reflected in the mind. Of course, the Upanishad will use cryptic language. The eye of the eye, ear of the ears, mind of the mind and all that it will say. Alright. Very good. Now what happens? Now, we will ask a question. Remember, what's our goal? Our goal is to realize who am I. Now, we will ask a question. Three questions, actually. This I sense, which is conscious, this conscious I sense, how is it related to the body? How is it related to the mind? And how is it related to the real I, pure consciousness? Let me repeat. Three questions. This catch hold of the I sense, which we all are feeling now. And what is this I sense? There are two sides to it. One is that it's a thought. I is a thought. But it's also conscious. You're with me?
Yes.
Just like the reflection in the mirror. It's a reflection. Just like all of the reflection. But it's also very uncannily like you. Your reflection. So the I thought, this ego, conscious, how is it connected to body, mind, and pure consciousness, the real I? The answer is, this I thought is connected to the body by karma. As long as prarabdha karma is there, this body, you will feel, I am this body. This I thought will be connected to this body. When the prarabdha karma is destroyed, when the is exhausted, this body will die and this I thought will no longer identify itself with this body. It will be part of the subtle body which transmigrates and goes on to other bodies. Punarjanma can go on. But then this body can be buried, burned, whatever. I don't care. But right now I care very much because I think I am associated with this. I say I am this or it is my body. So I thought is associated. The answer is this. First question, how am I associated with this body? I am associated with this body by prarabdha karma, by past actions, by the results of past actions. When will this association end? When will I divorce my body? When the body dies. When will the body die? At the end of my prarabdha karma. That particular past part of my karma which ties me with this, which has produced this body. Up to that time, this I thought will be associated with this body. And when this body dies, the I thought will go along with the subtle body and then inhabit some other body. Be born as a baby somewhere else. Then it will be associated with that body. Second question. How is the I thought associated with me, the pure consciousness? How is it associated with the consciousness? Not me, the pure consciousness. How is the I thought associated with consciousness? A subtle question. I am there and I feel conscious. So this reflected consciousness, how is it associated with this reflected consciousness? The answer is, it's naturally associated. As long as the reflector is there, it will be conscious. It will feel conscious. It is like asking, how is the reflected face associated with the mirror? How is the reflected face associated with the mirror? Your answer is, it's naturally associated. Every time you put a mirror, there will be a reflected face. You put a mirror in front of you, you put a mirror anywhere, there will be a reflection. And that reflection is naturally associated with the glass of the mirror. It is actually nothing other than the mirror itself. The reflection is nothing other than the mirror. If you touch that reflection, what will happen? You're touching glass. You're touching the mirror itself. Whatever is reflected in the mirror, trees, sky, water, whatever it is, you try to touch, you will not find trees, sky, water. You'll just find glass. You'll find the mirror only. It is natural. I'm translating, by the way. Those who have studied Drig Drishya Viveka, you know I'm just literally translating from Drig Drishya Viveka. Sahajam, natural association. As long as you feel the I thought, it will feel conscious. It is trivial almost, mathematically speaking. Trivial. It is, I thought will always be conscious. Because whenever the I thought is there, mind is functioning, mirror is there, face will be reflected. I thought is there, consciousness will be reflected. I will feel conscious. Third question. What is the connection between this I thought, which you have right now, and the so-called real I, which Advaita is teaching us, Atman, Brahman, heart, pure consciousness? What is the connection? What is the connection? It's a crucial question. What? Only when you know the connection, you can cut it. You can transcend it or overcome it. What is the connection between your reflected face and your real face? What is the connection when you're seeing a mirror, when you saw in the mobile, when you saw your face in the mobile? What's the connection between your real face and this reflected face?
Nothing.
One sadhu put it in Uttarakhand very nicely. He said, Bevkufi matra hai Mahatma ji. Stupidity alone is the connection. It is like somebody, just imagine the craziness, silliness of the situation, like somebody who is seeing his own face in the mirror and so entranced with it, has forgotten this is his real face, thinks, I am that. I am that one. Now, if you ask the question, what is the connection between his real face and that one? You will say stupidity, ignorance, self-forgetfulness. If the mirror, then what happens? What all samsara will start. Mirror samsara will start for him. Dirt on the mirror, my face is dirty. Then scratch on the mirror, my face is scratched. Crack in the mirror, terrible disaster, my face is cracked. Mirror becomes concave, my face has become concave. I've seen the trick mirrors. My face has become concave. Mirror becomes convex, my face has become convex. Whatever happens to the mirror, it will happen to the reflection. And if I think I am that reflection, gone. You're trapped in mirror samsara. Similarly, when I forget myself as pure consciousness and I think I am what? I am I. This one. Right now I'm feeling I. This is your reflection in the mind. More specifically, your reflection in the I thought. What is the mirror? The mind in general, but specifically Ramana points out, concentrate, concentrate, don't look at the other reflections in the mirror. Look at your face in the mirror. Look at the I thought in the mind. In the I thought, there are two components. Actually three. So there are three components. In that I thought, three components. In the reflected face, there are three components. What are the three components? Mirror, reflected face, and actually real face, which is not there, but it is causing that similarity there. It's causing the similarity. Real face, reflected face, mirror. Real Atma, Satchidananda, pure consciousness. Reflected consciousness, Chidabhasa, like your reflected face. And the Ahankara, the I thought, which is the mirror. Of course, all thoughts are the mirror, the mind itself. But I thought, specifically focused there. I thought is a mirror. Consciousness reflected there is Chidabhasa. And is like the reflected face. And real face is like Chit, pure consciousness. Put this framework in your mind. When will this go? Look at the three questions. What is the relationship between the I thought and the body? Prarabdha karma. As long as the body is alive, I will feel I am this body. I thought will feel connected to this body. When will this go? When the prarabdha is over. When will the prarabdha be over? At the point of death of this body. Actually, when the prarabdha is over, death will come for the body. Then the I thought will not be associated with this body anymore. The second question, what is the relationship between the I thought and consciousness, reflected consciousness? Natural. The same as the relationship between the mirror and reflected face. Natural. Whenever mirror, reflected face. Whenever I thought is there, it will feel conscious. Right now, we all feel conscious. As long as I thought is there, it feels conscious. Reflected consciousness is there when the I thought is active. When the I thought is not active, like in deep sleep, we listen to Vedanta saying, yes, there is consciousness in deep sleep, but we don't feel that. We feel that, no, there is nothing in deep sleep. It's because what we mean by consciousness in our unenlightened state, what we mean by consciousness is that reflected consciousness, Chidabhasa, that disappears in deep sleep. We feel nothing in deep sleep. Limitless consciousness is shining upon the darkness of the deep sleep state. We don't see that at all. We don't see that at all. We don't realize that at all. Third question. So, when will this reflected consciousness cease? If you take the mirror away, reflected face will go away. If you stop the I thought, the reflected consciousness in the I thought will also go away. Like in deep sleep, no I thought, no consciousness in I thought also. But now the real question. How do I cut the relationship between reflected face and real face? Normally, we don't ask this question because we have no problem. We are all mirror enlightened. Because whenever we see the mirror, we are in Jivan Mukta. We see, we enjoy the face. My beautiful face I can see. But this is the thing about the beautiful face. I don't have to inflict it on myself. Everybody else gets to see it. So I am safe from my quote-unquote beautiful face. You are not safe. But and I see that, I'm enlightened, I have no problem, I don't get entangled. If the mirror is dirty, I polish the mirror. Mirror is cracked, I can replace the mirror, I can carry on with the cracked mirror, no problem. Similarly, enlightened person, when he is experiencing the mind and the body, any problem, he can fix it without thinking it is my problem. Or he may not fix it, mind and body may deteriorate and die, body may die, no problem at all. But for us, we have become so involved with the face in the mirror. We have become so involved with the I thought that we have to separate. Now tell me, how will you separate?
Knowledge.
Because what is the bond? How will you separate body and I? Death only. Without that you cannot separate. How will you separate mind and I? Only by shutting down the mind.
Sorry.
You have to shut it down. Can you? Yeah. It's okay. No problem.
I didn't realize it. I touched some other button.
It comes up. So these machines are becoming more and more intelligent. Endowed with intelligence. So, how do we separate this I thought from the real I?
Knowledge.
The only thing that ties me with the reflected face If I'm confusing my real face with reflected face, it's ignorance. It is foolishness. It is self-forgetfulness. I will have to be reminded of myself. You are not there. You are here. See, another subtle point. What is the advantage of the reflected face and disadvantage of the real face? Reflected face, you can see it. Real face, you cannot see. Drigdrishya Viveka, that verse said, Drigeva natu drishyate, the seer never becomes the seeing. So the reflected face can be seen, it's very obvious, it's there. You can objectify it. But real face cannot be seen. But what is the advantage of the real face and disadvantage of the reflected face? The real face is real. That's the advantage. I am this. And it transcends. It transcends the mirror and the reflection. Any problem there, no problem here. But the reflected face is subject to every problem. That mirror is samsara. It's the mind. Mind is reflecting samsara. Everything in samsara comes in there. Every sorrow, ups and downs will affect that reflected face. So knowledge. How will you cut? By knowledge. Bodha. Bodha. Bodha is awareness. Realization. Knowledge. Karmakshayat. Karmakshayat bodhat. And then one more thing it said. So the natural thing, the reflected eye and the mirror, reflected face in the mirror will continue as long as mirror is there. As long as mind is active, ego will be there. But you have to snap the connection between you, the pure consciousness, and that reflected consciousness there. That has to be snapped by knowledge. And that knowledge can only come through inquiry. So this is the background. Keep this in mind, the rest will become very clear. Number 20.
Ahaminasha bhajahangahantaya. Ahaminasha bhajahangahantaya. Surati rit swayam paramapurnasat. Surati rit swayam paramapurnasat.
20th verse. What had he promised? When you inquire into it, it will fall apart. This I sense will fall apart. Fall apart means into its constituents. What are the constituents of the I sense? I said three things are there. In the mirror, reflected face, three things are there. Mirror is there, reflection is there, and the real face behind it all is there. In the I, in the ego sense, which is conscious, what is there? The mind is there, thought. Ego is a thought. Ahang vritti. Ahankara vritti. Plus, reflected consciousness is there. Plus, real consciousness, the pure consciousness, the real I is there. When you inquire, what will happen is, on one side will fall the ahankara with the reflected consciousness, on the other side will fall apart the pure I, the pure consciousness I, the real I. That's what's going to happen now.
Ahaminasha bhajyam.
That means when the ego is destroyed. This is the meaning of manonasha, destruction of the mind. Why is it my destruction of the mind? Because mind has all kinds of thoughts. That is the mind. All kinds of thoughts are of two kinds. Others and I thought. And I thought is the ashraya, is associated with all other kinds of thoughts. So basically the mind is the I thought. When the mind is destroyed, then the mind is destroyed. How is the I thought destroyed? When it falls apart into its constituents. What are its constituents? And just imagine the reflected face. On one side remains the mirror with the reflection of your face. Other side remains you. Other side remains you. Never was it tied. You see? That chidjada granthi, the knot of consciousness and insentient matter. You have to cut that knot. Like a Gordian knot. And Alexander the Great cut the Gordian knot. But here, how do you cut the Gordian knot? But through the sword of knowledge. Actually, there is no knot. There is no... Where is your real face tied with the reflection? Nowhere. If you have that confusion has to be cleared up. that inquiry will show you are the witness consciousness. On the other side is the mind with its reflected consciousness and its ego. The two fall apart. So the aham, I thought, has fallen apart. On one side is ahankara, which is no longer I. On the other side is the real I, aham brahmasmi. It's not mentally saying I'm brahmasmi, that's a real fact, pointing towards the real I. This is called ahami nashabhajya. When the I thought comes to destruction, then what happens? Aham ahantaya. The real I is manifested. The real I is manifested. Shankaracharya points out, have you noticed Shankaracharya's Nirvana Shataka? Mm-hmm. Mano buddha ahankara cittani naham. Look at that first line. Mano buddhi ahankara cittani na aham. How do you translate that? Mind, intellect, memory, ego. I am not. If you translate literally, ego means the I. Then you will see, I am not. I am not I. So is he schizophrenic or what? No. He realizes that the ahankar, that component of the mind, mind has these four components. The mind itself, the sankalpa, vikalpa, the movement of the mind, thoughts and feelings and all that. Then the intellect, which we are using to understand all this. That's also mind. We are using the mind. The storehouse memory, the hard disk. And the ego sense, which appropriates all of this, coordinates and says, I am thinking, feeling, remembering. Now, I have forgotten my real face and I am associated with one reflection in that mirror, my face. Now, I'm going to cut that by seeing that that's also part of the mirror. That's also a reflection. The real I is here. I am not I. Ahankara na aham. Remember the reflection example, it'll become clear. My real face is not that reflected face. That reflected face is a reflection. It's in the mirror. It is similar to my real face. Similarly, the ahankara, the ego sense, is a thought. It's part of the mind. It is similar to me because it is conscious. Where does the consciousness come from? From me. I, the consciousness, am reflected. This is the analysis. Spurati hrit svayam. Instead of saying I, pure consciousness, Shankaracharya says Chidananda rupaha shivoham shivoham. Here Ramana Maharshi says hrit svayam, the heart itself. What does it do? Sphurati, it shines. Parama, param, purna, sat. All these words are very important. So, Spurati Swayam. Spurati means shines. Shines reflects, shines points to consciousness. Consciousness shines by itself, Spurati. Swayam means self, self-luminous, Swaprakasha, self-luminous. I'm going to lead you through a very subtle but powerful analysis, which will point out to ourselves that I am the pure consciousness, I am Sat. I am Chit. I am this Swayam, Spurati Swayam, Swaprakasha, self-luminous nature. I'll prove it. Here is the logic. It's in two parts. First is, my own existence is undeniable. I know that I exist. In our recent time, recent means about 300 years ago, Descartes, the famous French mathematician philosopher. So we have all studied Cartesian coordinates, we all know that. But he was also a philosopher. And he's famous for in the philosophy of mind as the person who had this, you know, the Cartesian project of doubting whatever could be doubted. Now, what is it that cannot be doubted? Is there anything that is so certain that it cannot be doubted? And what did he find? He found his own existence. Anything in the world can be, whatever I know, it can be doubted. Maybe it's a dream. He thought of, he considered, this was before virtual reality, before computers. He imagined a thought experiment. He called it a malign demon. Suppose there's a demon which is supplying all my senses with you know, vision, sound, just like virtual reality today. So I could be seeing this world, it may not be real. Or it may be a dream. It may be a hallucination, a dream, a kind of a virtual reality, Matrix movie. You seem to be there, you're seeing, interacting with people, everything is there, your own body, and yet the whole thing is an appearance. I could be wrong. It can be doubted. And we are often wrong in our experiences in the world. However, one thing I cannot be wrong about, which Descartes found, is my own existence. Cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I exist. If I doubt, well, do I exist or not? I'm still thinking, therefore I exist. The doubter cannot be doubted. Hundreds of years ago, Shankaracharya wrote, Yaeva tasya nirakatta tasyeva atmasa. Whoever denies the existence of the self, it is the self of that very denier. To deny something, you must be there. The denier must be there. You cannot have a denial without a denier. So, I exist. It is indubitable. Nobody doubts this. But whatever I know can be doubted. Now the question is, how do I know that I exist? Let me repeat this. I exist. Step one, we have accomplished this. Nobody doubts it. I exist. But how do I know? How do I know that I exist? These are two different questions. My own existence, it's absolutely clear to me that I exist. But how is it clear to me? I can exist without it being clear to me. How do I know that I exist? Now the answer will be like this. Here's the second part of the inquiry. How do we know anything? All knowledge depends upon knower, means of knowledge, and object of knowledge. In Sanskrit, pramata, the knower. Pramana, the means of knowledge. And prameya, the object of knowledge. The flower, here, to put it very simply, the flower is an object of knowledge. Which is a fancy way of saying that you see a flower. You are seeing the flower. You are the pramata, the seer, the knower. The flower is the prameya, the object known. And you are using means of knowledge, eyes, pramana, chakshusha pratyaksha in Sanskrit. The perceptual, this visual perception, that's your means of knowledge. You, the knower, flower is the known, eyes are the means of knowledge. Pramata, prameya, prameya and pramana. Pramata, prameya and pramana. Now I say, I know myself, I know that I exist, which means the pramata, the knower, knows his own existence. To know his own existence, how do you know anything? Three things are required, knower, means of knowledge, and object of knowledge. If that is the way he knows his own existence, then there will require to be another knower using some other esoteric means of knowledge to know the existence of this knower. And that knower, how will that knower know his own existence? It will require another knower using some other means of knowledge to know the existence of this second knower. And then this will go into what is called regresses ad infinitum, or in ancient Sanskrit terms, anavastha dosha. That is lack of foundation, lack of ground. Now this infinite regress, anavastha, is considered a defect in logic. A defect in logic, a fallacy. That is, there's something has gone wrong with your reasoning process, that's why you're stuck in this kind of a strange situation. Not only that, there's a huge price we pay for that. What is the price? No knowledge will be possible. If knowledge requires an established knower, established means of knowledge, to reveal an established or establish an object of knowledge, then if the knower is not established until the earlier one is known, and that is not established until the earlier one is known, and if each instant of knowledge, if each action of knowledge takes one instant of time also, then you will go back immediately to the infinite past. Knowledge itself cannot happen, because there will be no beginning to it. Then this series will never be completed. Then you will never see the flower. But yet you are seeing the flower. So knowledge is possible. Your own existence is established. And you said that I have no doubt that I exist. So you know your own existence. And yet it cannot be the knower, means of knowledge, and object of knowledge, kind of knowledge. It cannot be the triputi, the three things. The only option. Knowledge doesn't work here. Knower, means of knowledge, object of knowledge. And yet I know myself. In that case, I, me, myself must be self-revealed. There's no other option. Nobody else is knowing me. I know myself. But I don't know myself by the usual process of knower, knowable object. Then I must be self-shining, a self-revealed. This is called Swaprakasha. Ramana Maharshi says, Spurati Hit Swayam. Rit, Atma, consciousness, Spurati, shines forth, revealed. How? By yourself. This flower is revealed. How? Not by itself. Light reflects upon it and then rushes to your eyes, then through your eyes, through your optic nerves, races to your brain centers, somehow there creates a vritti in the mind. Nobody knows how. Care of David Chalmers. Nobody knows how. It creates a vritti in your mind and that is revealed by the reflected consciousness shining in your eye thought and you feel, I see a flower. Behind it all is one luminosity, the real you. This is ordinary knowledge. So I, the Atman, the Rit, am self-shining. Remember this two-step logic. First, establish there's no doubt that you exist. Second, ask, how do you know that you exist? Not by the normal process of knowledge. It must be self-shining, self-revealed. Very elegant, actually. Advaita Makaran, the care of Advaita Makaran. These are all the little arguments he has packed into that text, that interesting little text. So, Surati Hrit Swayam, I am self-luminous, self-shining. I shine, shining, everything else shines. Tameva Bhantam Anubhati Sarvam, that shining, everything else shines. By your light, everything here is lit up. Tasya Bhasa Sarvam Idam Vibhati. Not only that, the only thing that we can be certain of is this self-shining self, Atman. Everything else that we know is subject to doubt. Whatever knowledge that we get by the usual process of knowledge, knower, object of knowledge, means of knowledge, is always open to doubt, is always open to correction, is always open to revision, peer-reviewed. So correction. So always, and that's how science progresses also. Descartes knew this. Knew means he had sensed it. He writes a very poignant point in his Meditations. He says this. It is passing strange that of that which I know so much, I can never be sure of. And that which I am sure of, I know nothing. That which I know so much. What is that I know so much? Science, religion, literature, world, universe. I know so. Physiology, anatomy. I know so much. But nothing I can be sure of. Everything can be doubted. And what I am sure of totally, I, me, my own existence. But I don't know anything about it. Why I don't know anything about it? Now we know. We know why we don't know anything. Because he's thinking, to know something about myself, I also must use knower, means of knowledge and object of knowledge. That way you cannot know yourself. It cannot be, it will lead to anavastha, infinite regression. What we know about ourselves, the next step which he did not take, then what am I? I must be something which is existent by itself and luminous by itself. Surati Hrit Swayam. Surati shines. This also shines, but it shines because you are deploying instruments of knowledge. But you shine, not because you're deploying instruments of knowledge. You are self-shining. And that self-shining you actually is the one which powers all knowledge. Keno Upanishad. Because of what do I think, see, hear, smell, taste, touch, speak? It is because of that self-shining you. That's why, you see, if you're asked a question, what is the proof of all this, that you are the Atman? You know what the real answer is? Consider what you're asking. You're asking for proof. Pramana. All proofs depend upon you, the Atman. You shining, every proof operates. The proofs depend upon you. Your existence does not depend upon those proofs. Smurati Hit Swayam. Param transcends. Transcends means just as your real face transcends all the problems of reflected face. Reflected face is crying. I am dirty. Mirror has become dirty. I'm dirty. Or mirror has become cracked. Oh my God, I'm gone. I'm cracked. Mirror is concave, convex. Whatever is happening. And the moon reflected in the water. When the ripples come in the water, the moon also wavers. But the real moon does not waver. Similarly, your param, you transcend samsara. In philosophical language, you transcend time, space, object. You are not limited by time. You are not limited by space. You are not limited by object. That is, why are you param? Purna. Purna means time, space and object. You are not limited by it, but they are all within you. See, param means transcending. You are beyond the time, space and object. Like you are beyond the mirror and its reflection. You are safe. Whatever happens to the mirror, you are safe. Purna means, now the mirror example will not appear anymore. Because the mirror is clearly separate from my face. But now Purna means it includes everything. You are beyond time, space and object means you are not limited by time. There is no time when you did not exist, there is no time when you will not exist. You are not born, you will not die. Birth and death are within time. You are not changing, that is, change is within time. So you are beyond time. You are beyond space. It's not that you are localized in a particular space and there is another space where you are not. That's like the body. The body is localized here, there is another space where you are not. You are not, you are all pervasive. You are there everywhere. An object. It's not that you are one object, this body, and not the others. Rather, you are everything. Sarvam kalvidam brahmam. But when you come to Purnam, one more thing happens. Space, time and object are also within you. It is, now that's why the mirror example will not apply anymore. What will apply? Dream example. Mm-hmm. So in a dream, you are walking and talking with people, enjoying a cup of tea, enjoying the nice park and everything. When you wake up, see in the dream, what did it appear? I am sitting here, my friend is sitting here, and here is a table and a cup of tea, and we are enjoying, here is the park and trees and sky and smoke. It is all there, outside me. And beyond that is the world, vast world is there, unknown to me, which I cannot see also. All of that is there. When I wake up, what happens? When I wake up, I realize all of that. That person, the table, cup of tea, the trees, smoke, space, and the vast unknown world. Everything was my mind only. Mm-hmm. It's all included in my mind. It all appeared. It's not that they were real and part of my mind. They all appeared. Mind appeared as all of that. Purna means you are that which appears as the universe. Then only non-duality is established. Purna Sat. All of this is nothing but being. Sat. Spurati Hrit Swayam means you are self-luminous consciousness. Chit. The entire universe you are means you are Sat, pure being. You are Sat Chit. Aham Sat Chit. Anantam Sat Chit. Purnam also means Anantam, not limited by time, space and causation. So, I am existence consciousness, unlimited existence consciousness. Let me just do one more verse and we'll stop. 22nd verse gives us the actual procedure for self-inquiry. Just like we did Rig Drishya Viveka in a more detailed and in-depth, where do we start and how do we end up as limitless consciousness? That will be done in 22nd verse. That we will leave till tomorrow. The morning, but now let me do 21st verse. This is a very profound verse. Idamaham padabhikyamanvaham.
Idamaham padabhikyamanvaham.
Ahamilina kepyalaya sattaya.
Ahamilina kepyalaya sattaya.
Idam aham pada abhikyam anvaham. So, idam, this I. This is there, anvaham ahamilinake. When the reflected I, when the ego disappears in deep sleep also, this I continues. What is it called? Alaya Saptaya. Sapta means existence. And alaya means which never merges, which never disappears. Everything else disappears. Everything else is merged. World and the ego is merged. But the witness I, pure consciousness, it continues. So, it is like this. Right now, I am what Vedanta calls the waker. I feel I am here in this body and mind. Here is the world. And I am the waker. This is my waking world, which I'm experiencing. Some of it I know. Some of it I don't know. Here, by the way, let me add a little footnote. Very important. When we say everything is in consciousness, a doubt often arises. But I'm not experiencing what is happening on Saturn or Pluto or something like that. How is it in my consciousness? There's a difference between knowing and not knowing, and a difference between conscious and knowledge. So there can be things which I know, and there can be things which I do not know. But as the known and the unknown, both are present in consciousness. Very important. Let me give an example. So the senior most member in our Vedanta society is Bill Conrad. He is 99 years old this month. He is a veteran of the Second World War. He used to fly bombers over the Pacific Theater. A very interesting story of his life. And he has been in Vedanta since 1955. So one question he has, now how is it possible that the world is in my consciousness, Swami? The world exists and then we come to see it. And we see only a tiny fraction of it. We experience only a tiny fraction of it. What is tiny, microcosmic, atomic level, that also we don't see. What is very far away, quasars and black holes, that also we don't see. In fact, very limited area we are seeing. And the rest of the world exists quite outside my consciousness. How are you saying everything is in my consciousness? Then he said, one day he said, people, when I try to answer him, people tell me there, Swami, don't be in a hurry to answer him. He had heard these questions before you were born. Till now, nobody has been able to satisfy him. So, one day he said, all right, Swami, I'm going to propose an experiment. We are going to leave this room. I'm going to put a camera. Literally, he said this. There's a camera here. I'm going to put a camera, switch it on, and then we are both going to leave this room. Then we are going to come back. And I'm going to show you in the camera a picture of an empty room without any conscious being. The room continued to exist. The pictures prove that the room continued to exist even when we are not there. It is not in your mind or my mind. It exists outside and then we are experiencing it. Common sense view. This is called realism. As against what is called subjective idealism. Alright. Now, I said to him, Bill, in your consciousness, you thought of this experiment, all right? And in your consciousness, you set up this camera. You're aware, right? In your awareness, you set up this camera. And in your awareness or consciousness, you told me, Swami, let us step outside the room. And we stepped outside the room in your consciousness, in your awareness. In your awareness, we came back into the room. In your awareness, we looked at the camera, the pictures, and we saw an empty room in your awareness. At which time did we step outside your awareness? Never, nor is it possible. It's a subtle answer. A lot of people don't get it, what is being said here. It's a big step ahead in our understanding of Advaita to get this. The room exists as a known room in my awareness. The room exists as completely unknown in my awareness. The picture of showing me the room without me is also in my awareness. You say, some distant planet is there, what is happening in that planet, we don't know. Yes, this is what you are saying in your awareness. This global awareness which we are talking about, is it ever possible to even step outside it? You cannot. This entire problem of spirituality, religion, theism, atheism, everything is happening in awareness only. That's a footnote I wanted to share with you. Alright, so this is the waker and this is the waking world. This is called waking state. And then we fall asleep. When we fall asleep, what happens? The waking world goes away. The fact that I am lying down on the bed and sleeping, that also goes away from my experience. I, the waker, I also go away from my experience. Now, I have a dream world. And in the dream world, I am there also. So I'm the dream. Later I will say, when I wake up, I will say that I was the dreamer and I was experiencing a dream world. In the dream world, I don't say that because I don't think I'm dreaming. I think I'm awake. Something is happening strange. I don't even think it's strange in the dream. So that happens. That's called dream state. And it's all happening in the mind. And then that also shuts down. The dream world goes away. The dream state goes away. The dreamer goes away. Deep sleep. For a while. Blank. No activity. There is no distinguishable dreamer and dreamt object or waker and waking object. It is just one indistinguishable mass of blankness. That is deep sleep state. You can say that there is a deep sleeper experiencing the blankness of deep sleep. You can say that. But, and this is called deep sleep state. So in Vedanta we have this terminologies. The triplets, three triplets are there. Waker, waking world, waking state. If you remember those who have studied Mandukya, you will say Vishwa, and then Jagat, Jagrat Prapancha, and Jagrat Avastha. Vishwa is the waker, the ego in the waking state. I am experiencing all this with this body and mind. What am I experiencing? Jagrat Prapancha, the expanse of this waking, the universe in the waking state. And what is this state called? Jagrat, waking. Where you contact the world through sense organs. Then there's the sleeper. And the dream, world of the dreams. And the dream state. In Sanskrit, Taijasa, Swapna Prapancha, and Swapna Avastha. Taijasa is the ego in the dream state. And Swapna Prapancha is the world, universe, whatever you've conjured up in that particular dream. And the whole state, what's going on there, is imagination in the mind based on old samskaras, old impressions. It's being created, like a virtual reality is being created. That is called Swapna Avastha. And then that also ceases. Neither sensor, by senses are you contacting the world. I'm translating from Mandukya Upanishad. By senses you are not contacting the world. By mind also you are not imagining anything. And there is no distinction between subject and object. Deep sleep state. There also you can think of a deep sleeper. You can sort of to complete the equation, Pragya, the deep sleeper, and the deep sleep universe, which is Swapna. There's no prapancha there. There's no universe. Just the bijavastha, the seed state. So these three. Now the point is, all of these three, they are appearing and disappearing to you, the consciousness. That you, the consciousness, is called the fourth. Turiya. Turiya literally means fourth. You, the consciousness, to you appears the waking universe in the waking state with the waking universe and the waking ego. And to you appears the dream universe and the dream ego in the dream state. To you appears the blankness of both, the cessation of activity, the deep sleeper pragya and the deep sleep universe, swapna. Sushupti and the Sushupti Avastha, the stage of Sushupti. These are all play of the mind. The activity of the mind and cessation of the activity of the mind causes waking, dreaming, deep sleep. You are the witness of all. They are all laya, they cease, they resolve themselves. You do not resolve yourself. You are the undissolved witness of all three states, the coming and going of all three states. And if you think of other states, people, see, recently somebody told me, oh, did you know that Tibetan Buddhists have 20 distinctions in deep sleep state? I said, I didn't know that. But it makes no difference to this analysis. Quite possible. I didn't think that you could make divisions, analysis of the deep sleep state. It seems that one, an indistinguishable mass of darkness. But maybe because doctors are making their distinctions in various types of coma, for example. There are gradations of coma. Maybe they're gradations. But from an Advaitic perspective, it makes no difference because we are not talking about the states themselves or the varieties of the qualities and the fine differences in phenomenologically what's happening in the states. No, we are asking, to what are all these appearing? Again, we are point out something crucial about Advaita Vedanta. Is we are interested in the experiencer. the experiencing consciousness, not in the contents of your consciousness. We are not interested in the experiences as such. The path of bhakti is interested in experience of one thing. Replace God, world experience with God experience. Bhakti. The path of yoga seeks to stop the experiencing mind. Stop the world experience. Still the mind. But you still experience the stilled mind. And the path of Advaita says, neither world experience, nor God experience, nor active mind, nor stilled mind. To whom are all these appearing and disappearing? Alaya Sattaya. The one unresolved, non-dissolved existence. To whom all these are appearing. That's what we are interested in. This is an important principle to understand in our life also. If you go to an, there's this, the story of somebody going to a monk in the Himalayas, and says, oh Swami, I have so much sorrow, suffering. And Swami shouts at him, right, saying, I don't care. How cruel, you don't care about my suffering. He says, I care about you, not your suffering. See, suffering is the content of your experience. I'm pointing you back towards the one who is suffering. I'm more interested in that one. When we do, I'll tell you why this is important. Simple point, but important. When we do Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, waking, dreaming, deep sleep, often somebody will ask, so in my dream, I experienced such and such things, and then they turned out to be true in the waking state, so dream is also true. Or I saw such and such thing in my dream. What does that mean? That is not the analysis of waking, dream, deep sleep. That is something your therapist will be interested in. Lie on the couch and tell that fellow all your dreams. What you experienced in the dream, he's interested. He will write down what is interested and give you some analysis based on that. Vedanta is not interested in the contents of our dreams. Vedanta is interested in that which makes dream possible. To whom is the dream appearing? To whom is the waking appearing? To whom is nothing appearing? Deep sleep. Blank. That one we are interested in. See, this thing continues in our spiritual life also. Then, this experience seeking, it continues. So we start seeking extraordinary experiences. Then what does this experience mean? That experience, and their experiences have meanings. In different paths, they have meanings. And the guru can tell you that. But Advaita is not interested in that. Advaita is interested in you, the consciousness, which makes all experiences, worldly experience, spiritual experience, experience of material reality, hallucination, virtual reality, all of it possible. And experience of nothing, deep sleep, that also is possible. What makes it possible? What is that? Who are you to whom all these experiences appear? That's what Advaita is interested in. That's why to almost every question, Ramana Maharshi's answer was, who is asking? He's not interested in the details of samsara or details of spiritual life also. He's interested in you, to whom there is samsara and spiritual life. When you become enlightened, you know what will happen. One Buddhist master put it this way. Upon enlightenment, what happens is, the display of samsara is replaced by the display of nirvana. But you remain the same. You, the one who felt I was in samsara and trapped, now you see that I am released and this is nirvana. But you are the same. Who will be released into nirvana? The one who felt was in samsara. There is not a separate Buddha and a separate samsari. The same one. And that same one, is he samsari or Buddha? Neither. It's just awareness. Okay. Now, having said that, the display of nirvana is much better than the display of samsara. Much better movie. So, we'll stop here. This is 21st verse is very important. It points directly to the turiya, the the alaya satta, that which does not disappear. You remember the framework, the Mandukya framework. Waker, waking world, waking stage. Dreamer, dream world, dream state. And deep sleeper, deep sleep world, so-called deep sleep state. In Sanskrit, Vishwa, Jagrat Prapancha, Jagrat Avastha. తైజస స్వప్న ప్రపంచ స్వప్న అవస్థ ప్రాజ్ఞ సుషుప్తి ప్రపంచ బీజ అవస్థ యాక్చువల్లీ అండ్ దెన్ ద సుషుప్తి అవస్థ అండ్ యూ కెన్ ఎక్స్టెండ్ ఇట్ ఫర్దర్ ఇఫ్ యూ బ్రింగ్ ఇన్ గాడ్ ఇట్స్ స్టిల్ ఇండివిజువల్ బ్రింగ్ ఇన్ ద కాస్మిక్ సో వాట్ విల్ హ్యాపన్ ద ఇండివిజువల్ వేకర్ విశ్వ అండ్ ద కాస్మిక్ వేకర్ విరాట్ Individual waker, what is it? Individual, what's the difference? The individual waker takes a slice of this universe, this much, and says, I am this. And the rest is other to me. I'm experiencing. And then samsara starts. Virat, the cosmic waker, is the one who is awake and experiences itself as one with the entire universe. That's the God of Vedanta. And then at the subtle level, dream level, the individual dreamer, Taijasa, and the individual dream state, the individual dream world, and then the cosmic dreamer, Hiranyagarbha, another name, cosmic mind. When all our minds are connected, the internet of minds, that's the cosmic mind. And then the deep sleep is Ishwara. So Pragya, the individual deep sleeper, and the cosmic deep sleeper is Ishwara. That's why Vishnu is always depicted as couch potato, you know, lying down on the Sheshnaga and sleeping. Now, one thing to note here, behind it all is Turiya. There's one consciousness, you, the real you. The real you in association with one causal body, Karana Sharira. The real you, Turiya, Atma, Hridaya, what he calls Rit. Will now be called Pragya, with one causal body. The real you, in association with all causal bodies taken together, are called Maya. In association with Maya, is called Ishwara, God, you. Your name is individual deep sleeper, your name is cosmic deep sleeper or God. More familiarly known by hashtag God. Huh? Then, you, the pure consciousness, in association with one causal body and one subtle body, will be called Taijasa, the dreamer. You, the same consciousness, in association with all causal bodies and all subtle bodies, will be called Hiranyagarbha, cosmic mind. Consciousness plus cosmic mind. Then you, the same consciousness, in association with one causal body, one subtle body and one physical body, will be called Sarvapriyananda. Vishwa. Vishwa is a generic name. You each have individual names. Here, all of us, we have individual names. But you are the same pure consciousness. And you, the same pure consciousness, in association with total cosmic causal body, total subtle body, total physical universe, is called Virat. But and all of these are appearing and disappearing, Jagat Mithya, so they are like a movie appearing before you. In reality, you are that limitless consciousness. Turiya, Atman, Brahman, Rit. That's what you are right now. You bifurcate yourself into individual and God. Questions? I think we have 5 minutes more. Yes.
Just extending what you were talking about, these different states. So I have a waking state right now, dream state, and deep sleep state.
Yes.
And Turiya is...
Often you will find all three in a Vedanta class. Yes. And Turiya is...
I don't know, I've been in waking state for the last 1.5 hours. So... Now let's go to the Utkrishta Yogi,
yes.
Stita Prajna.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to imagine or vicariously experience how his state's going to be different from mine. So he has realized this is all a dream. So he is actually going through a dream waking state, a dream state.
And dream deep sleep. Correct.
Okay.
Now, one thing might be that, first of all, straightforward common sense answer. Do they wake, dream and sleep? Yes, just like rest of us. And no. If you really push matters, you'll say that I am forever awake. Because their waking is consciousness. Mm. It's like saying, are there days and nights in the sun? No. The sun is ever shining. But all days and nights are due to the sun. It's I shining on my own appearances which causes these waking dream and deep slates at this individual level or cosmic level. But I by myself am ever shining. I'm ever awake. The more and more we identify with, we turn our attention to our ever-shining nature, even the idea that I can dream or sleep doesn't stand. That I'm ever shining. I am shining. There's one Swami, I forget his name, the Ramakrishnamurti, he was in Thrissur. He wrote a poem, which I never read, but I like the name of the poem, Midnight Sun. That is the Atman in deep sleep state. The midnight sun. There's sometimes you see in Nordic countries, It's night, but the sun is shining. What is it like when there is no universe, no body, no thought, no personal identity, yet I'm fully awake, limitlessly awake?
So Turiya is the ever-shining state?
Yeah, not ever-shining light to which all these states appear and disappear.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that you are. That's what we are. If you ask, so do you wake, dream and sleep? No. Gaudapada Acharya himself in the Mandukya, He talks about waking, dreaming, deep sleep. And then he makes a point. In the Karika, he says, actually there are only two states. Sleeping and dreaming. So, he says, waking and dreaming. He makes two distinctions. He says that
dreaming and dreaming same.
Waking and dreaming, he puts it same. Dream and sleep, he says two states, yeah.
Yes.
So waking and dreaming are both dreaming.
Yes.
They're just, he makes it equal, equivalent. And then there you don't have any particular experience, that is sleeping. These are only two states.
So the waking is Ishvara's dream.
Yes, waking is Ishvara.
And sleeping is an individual dream.
Yes. But then if you look at, there are different perspectives. There's something called Srishti Drishtivada and then Drishti Srishtivada. Srishti Drishtivada is the common sense approach which we have. We are individual beings and there's some cosmic being called Ishvara. Just as I have a dream of my own, similarly Ishvara has this dream. But Drishti Srishtivada would say that you are the only being who's there. And this world is your dream. So your waking and your dream are both dreams. And deep sleep is no particular experience. The reality is you, the ever shining. Question?
Swamiji,
yes.
Swamiji, can you explain in brief terms, how Siddharth Gautama's approach was similar or dissimilar to all the different approaches you have talked about?
It's a big, big question. I have some talks on it. You'll see Vedantic self and Buddhist non-self. Not nonsense, non-self. or no self. There's a talk on that. If you look it up on YouTube, details are there.
Recently.
And recently, yeah, there's one. And then there is a talk on Shunyam. That will show you the evolution of Buddhist philosophy about this. I think Buddhism was pointing to the same truth, which Advaita Vedanta is pointing. But he was quite an innovator, so he took the core idea from, he had the core idea from the Upanishads, but then he developed his own path to it, which is now what is called Buddhism. As you go closer, you appreciate the differences, but I still hold on to the fact that they are not pointing to two different realities. They are pointing to the same reality. Let's put it this way. I like this formulation. Advaita. So there are two ways of misunderstanding. One is a way of misunderstanding Advaita, one is a way of misunderstanding Buddhism. The way of misunderstanding Advaita is to think that we are talking about something. Something called the Atman, something called Brahman. It's not like that. So one might be puzzled. So it's not a thing? No, it's not a thing. It's like if you have multiple ornaments made of gold, necklaces and bracelets and and rings. And then you start talking about gold. Gold is the real thing, you know. The person who doesn't understand what you're talking about will think that gold is another fantastic kind of ornament. Gold is not an ornament. Huh? Gold is not an ornament. The moment you say that to a person who thinks, who knows only ornaments, they'll say that, oh, so gold is not an ornament, then gold is nothing. No, it's not that gold is nothing. Gold is the reality out of which all ornaments are made. But gold is not another type of ornament. So when we talk about Atman, Brahman, the tendency is we know things in the world. So are you talking about some very spiritual, subtle, extraordinary thing? No. It is the reality of all these things. Just as gold is the reality of all ornaments, it is the reality of all these things. So, the way of misunderstanding Advaita Vedanta is to think that Atman, Brahman, Satchidananda is something. There's a list of catalog of things, there's one more thing. That becomes dualism. That there are many things and there is something called God. Then the way of misunderstanding Buddhism is, they're trying to say nothing. They're not trying to say nothing. They're not saying that the no self is zero, nothing. It's not nothing. So it's not a thing, it's not nothing. The Buddhist masters themselves clearly point out, Nagarjuna and others, that you do us an injustice if you think we are nihilists. So it's not a thing, it's not nothing. I like to call it no thing, no hyphen thing. So no thing is not nothing. No thing is not a thing. Atman, Brahman, pure consciousness is not a thing, but it's not nothing. It's very different, very, very far from nothing. It's in fact the reality of everything. Okay, one more. You had a question and then I'll come to you. Yes.
So Swami, everything we are discussing about is in Maya, correct?
Yeah.
So there is no answer to why Maya is. That's so basic question we are not. There is even in all the theories, why Maya has never been
true. We can answer that. Uh-huh. So we're going to answer that question. Why is there Maya? Hold your breath. Or don't. Everything they're discussing is in Maya, true. But Maya is also in Brahman. And you are Brahman. So everything we're discussing is in you. And you are real. Anyway, but now the question is, but then why all this? Why do we at all have to trouble Prabodhi and sit in his basement and talk about endless subtle ancient philosophies? Somerset Maugham put it very well. He went to meet Raman Maharshi. And he had read Vedanta. He has written some essays, which is very good. The famous novelist, English novelist, Somerset Maugham. So then he says, when he says that Brahman projected this entire universe through Maya, and he writes in his dry British humor, he writes, one feels Brahman could have left well enough alone. Brahman could have not done this and spared us all this trouble. So now what is the answer? There are multiple answers actually. I'll give you two of the most sophisticated. One answer, philosophically most sophisticated answer, they will say the question itself is wrong. Now you might ask, why is the question wrong? So here's the answer. Vivekananda actually has given this explanation. He says that when we ask why, we are asking for a cause. Why is it smoky? Because of Canadian fire. Why is there Canadian fire? Because of global warming. Why is there global warming? And so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you're asking for a cause. When you ask why, I'm seeing an effect, and you're asking for a cause. Why is this happening? Now, Maya itself is causation. Time, one definition of Maya is Desha Kala Nimitta. Time, space, causation is Maya. Swami Vivekananda put it dramatically this way. The universe is the wreckage of the infinite on the shores of time, space and causation. So, don't worry, it's not really wrecked. It looks wrecked. Now, to make it easier, just look at it this way. If you ask, what is outside space? The question is wrong, because the moment you use a word like outside and inside, you've already accepted space. If you say outside space, there's something, you're imagining some kind of space outside space. So, you can't ask what is outside space. Outside, inside means you have accepted space. You can't ask what was there, what there before time. So, cosmologists talk about time beginning from the Big Bang and all that, but they can't talk about before time that way. So, before time you cannot ask, because before and after are time words, tense, past, present, future. You already accepted time. Then you ask before. Similarly, you cannot ask why Maya. It's like asking why causation. Causation basically is why. You're asking why. So you already accepted causation. Then you're asking. If you don't accept causation, time, space, causation, there is no question of asking why anymore. Practically what it means is, as we talked about the mirror example, your real face is not connected causally with the reflected face. See, there's one-way causation. You are there because of you, the reflected face appears in the mirror. But that reflected face does not do anything to you. You are not causally connected. You are there because of the nature of the mirror, a reflection appears. But you are not otherwise causing and not doing anything or causing anything. So Brahman is not causally connected to Maya. The universe is, cause and effect is there with Maya. This is one answer. The straight answer is, answer question is wrong, because you are already accepting Maya when you are asking why Maya. You cannot, so this cause and effect, you cannot extend it beyond Maya. What is the cause of Maya? Because causation is part of Maya. Beyond Maya, no causation. The second answer is something that I came across, a very simplistic answer, is that why this universe? Why did the many come from the one? We say Maya, but then you say why Maya? The answer would be this, that what are the options before Brahman? Either Brahman could appear as something or as nothing. We say, why did Brahman appear as this? Well, then what is the option? He could have been nothing, just remain Satchidananda. Be happy. Why causing trouble to us? Remain as Satchidananda. But that's what Brahman does. When the universe is created, it appears as, you know, Srishti, Sthiti, as this entire universe. When the universe is gone, pralaya, at the end of the cosmic cycle, nothing. Blank. Brahman alone exists with its power. Our own life, every day, there is something, waking, dreaming, good and bad, all is going on. Then there is nothing in deep sleep. So these are the only two options before Brahman. Either appear, once you appear, there is a chain of causation, it will have, you can inquire why this, not why not that, then that becomes a philosophical question, scientific question. Science will kick in and try to explain there, what, why this and why not that. But at all, why is it appearing? That's one option before Brahman, to appear one as the many. The other option is not to appear. That also Brahman fulfills. Now what will you blame poor Brahman? Suppose Brahman did not appear as anything and somehow you were there and you ask, why are you not appearing, useless Brahman? Do something. This is all right, I will do. Universe. Then we ask, we accuse it, why are you doing all this? All right, nothing, disappear, go. Yeah, so, all of it's there. The thing is, if you realize yourself as Brahman, you're free of the trouble. Then it's fine. It's like a movie screen. If you ask, why are you appearing as the movies? And that's what I do. My nature is movie screens to shine forth as tragedies, comedies, science fiction, horror. My nature as Satchidananda is to shine forth as samsara. This was the answer given by Gaudapada Acharya. Devasya esha swabhavayam. After examining every possible theory, why is there creation at all? He comes to this, even Maya, he discards that also and goes forward and says, this is the very nature of Brahman. To shine. Shine how? In these ways. Is Brahman experiencing itself, seeing its face in the mirror? That's the universe. That story by, what's his name? I love that story.
Alan Watts
story. The book is, the name of the book is The Book. And the subtitle is The Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. The book, it's called The Book. And there he has this little book, very nice. It's a mixture of Vedanta and Zen actually. So there he has this story. He says that God existed from eternity to eternity. But existing from eternity alone, nobody else is there, only God exists. It's very boring. And God got bored. God wanted to play, but he had no friends to play with. So God thought about it. What can I do? And because God is very clever, he thought of a solution. What is the solution? God pretended to be not God. Now there's a friend, he can play. This is God, and God pretending to be not God, so he can play. But the problem is, God is very good at what he does. Extraordinary, very skilled. So when he pretended to be not God, he pretended so well he forgot that he was God. And then God pretending to be not God and trying to find out who he is, this is samsara, here we are. That is Alan Watts. So should we wrap up?
Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna.
Depending upon your deity you worship. In our tradition we say Ramakrishna Arpanamastu, Samarpan Krishna Arpanamastu, Samarpan Shri Ramana Arpanamastu. Alright.